This is RSVNB Update, episode 646, recorded Thursday, November 16th, 2017, RuneScape's Abbey Road. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, Tanis is here. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Doing a little bit of randomness this month, based on what Jagex brings to us. You're here this week because Dimension of the Damned finale is happening this Saturday, still.
The what?
Right?
What? What was that?
I have to be totally honest with you. I forgot about Dimension of the Damned until I logged in this week and saw it in the upcoming content reminder in the lobby.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've been hoping that half of my competition is just going to forget or not care and show up. I mean, that's... Is that bad?
No, that's actually fine. Perhaps I shouldn't tell this story on this podcast, but maybe someday... I'll tell the story either in post show or you can ask me about it later, but I have a rather nefarious story about university final exams and my underhanded effort to get an advantage on those. But
nice.
But it didn't involve anything that was grounds for expulsion. I'll just say that.
Okay, but, well, you know, all's fair then, right?
Yeah, all's fair. All's fair in love and finals, or love and war in this case. All right, so this week we have a collection of patch notes, lots of little changes brought in, most of them by Mod Shani and one of his tap projects, one of his personal projects. He brought in a boatload of tool tips around items and whatnot, so it's pretty much you can mouse over any item that you see in-game and you can get an overview of what's going on, So, you know, if you look at your ports armor, it'll tell you exactly how much charge you have left in your ports armor, for example. You know, this whole thing kind of started, I think, when Invention came in with the amount of charge or the amount of XP on those items. So this is just kind of expanding it out beyond that. But of course, there's other things in the patch notes this week, so we'll just go through these and, you know, feel free to jump in at any time if there's any that I'm missing or if there's any items that you think really feel that they can truly benefit from this. So starting off with patch notes this week, an item charge tracker has been added to the following equipment degradation categories, including augmented tier 90 degrade to dust armor. The text will change based on color remaining, so green is at 100% to 65%, amber 65 to 25%, red 25% to 0%. How do those colors work for you?
Terribly.
Yeah. All right. What would be like, you know, we see this and it aren't you wishing at some point Jagex adds a colorblind option to the game with all the other toggles they have?
And you know, after I win and I'm at Jagex, that is my plan, is to get them to hire me as an accessibility officer and to help make sure we get this stuff in the game.
Yeah.
Secrets out.
What would work better? I know some do green, blue.
Well, yeah, a lot of people have like green and blue colorblind. I can't tell the difference between those. Red and brown can also be a problem for some people.
All right.
For me, it's just something that is like a very high contrast, like a yellow and a black or a white and a black. That anything that is like really super high contrast is better. But the mouse over text is actually, I mean, that's a good option. I think it's better to stay away from the colors altogether myself.
Yeah.
But
all right. Continuing on this same track, scrimshaws and godbooks now have a tooltip option displaying their time remaining when they're in their inactive state, and when their timer falls below 1 hour, the text will turn red. Along with this, urns now display the percentage filled in their tooltip. So I guess that's good if you just want to have a glance to see which urn you should grab out of your bank, because they are all unique items once they start being filled. So little bit of a tip out there from the Urn update. When double XP weekend came around, runecrafting urns and soul altar, that is the fastest runecrafting XP you can get in the game. Assuming you've unlocked that at Metaphos. But that's a topic for a previous month, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The upgraded gem bag will display the number of each gem inside of the gem bag. So that's good. It'll tell you exactly how many of each gem you have, which, I mean, when you think about it, previously it would be kind of a crapshoot to determine what was in there. So I'm happy about that. Mm-hmm. Charges remaining on the frozen key are now displayed in its tooltip. And the following items now display the type and the number of items contained inside. And these include the spring cleaner, the small and large rune pouch, the Tyrannan quiver, the ectoplasmator, blood essence, the coal bag, and silverhawk boots. The rune pouch one is good. I'm very happy about that.
Just because
you know, when you're filling those rune pouches, you never know what their current status is. So you're always trying to guess, is this full, is it not? So that should make rune crafting easier. I'm assuming it means the Abyssal rune pouches is not the Wicked rune pouch that you can store those in, that you purchased from SGS.
Yeah, I don't think so. I haven't even figured out how to restock that thing. So
A filtered warning message will now display when a degraded item hits 5% item charge or is equipped with less than 5% item charge remaining. Obviously, you won't still see that if you have the filtered warnings on. So that's just something that's there, I guess, if you might want to run with full game debug output on, I guess we could say. I find that still a little bit too noisy, so I just run it with filtered. So.
Mm-hmm. Although this warning for 5% charge, that's actually nice. Yeah. I don't know if this happens
actually
to you,
maybe, but if it's filtered, that means it'll appear even if you're
okay. That's good, because I don't know how many times I show up somewhere and then something breaks like mid hour and you're like, oh great, I don't have any pants. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
No, you know. Oh. Whatever it might be, your boots. It's usually boots with me.
They also did it for the Ring of Death as well. That one is for 20% item charge, as it costs 15% charge when dying. So obviously you would want to ensure that you're going to be able to still die correctly, right?
Yeah.
So so that's good. Continuing on from that, a filtered warning message was also added when equipping an augmented degrade to dust item that is out of charge but has yet to hit item level 10, making it unusable. Okay, so basically what this means is then if you have, for example, a tier 90 piece of power armor, it runs out of charge but it's not level 10 yet, you can't use it. So that will tell you what the case is right there with that. So that's good. I personally don't know anyone, though, who augments that. Do you?
No. No, I don't.
Yeah. Hmm. All right.
I guess someone must do it, right? I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know who, but somebody must.
And that would be really expensive when you think about it, right?
Yeah, it would.
So. Yeah. Anyways, some new tooltips have been added all across the board. So tooltips to display the passive effects for Asylum Surgeon's Ring, the Ring of Death, the Reaper Necklace, Amulet of Souls, Death Touch Bracelet, Forsaken Amulet, Dragon Rider Amulet, Arcane Brawler Blood and Farsight Amulet of Fearing, the Superior Leviathan Ring, Ring of Vigor, and the Tokel Zoe. Now we'll all tell what their passive effects are.
That's cool. I never know what the passive... I don't ever remember what the passive effect of anything is.
So yeah.
That's actually cool.
That's really good. Really good. So, and I mean, it's better than having to examine it. And I mean, when you're right in the bank, your only other option is going to be to just click and look and mouse over it. And I think that fits well within that. And, you know, I just want to highlight that now that we're at the point of going through these actual tooltip mouseovers, I think what this means for us is that, you know, ultimately what we're seeing is this is a huge usability update for the game. And it's just so nice that it's coming from one of these tap projects in a Ninja Fix week. And, you know, we might not like the fact that this is just a pure Ninja Fix week and there's not a headlining update, but at the same time, it's a good thing to have. So,
well, these weeks are important to have. I think where people started to get fed up was when it was week after week after week, you know. But these weeks are always important, and hats off to Mod Shawnee, man. He gets shit done. Like, he just, I like that guy. He's fast becoming my favorite mod.
Oh, yeah, and
JMod.
Yeah, yeah, and he does lots of great work for PR stuff, too.
Yeah, he really does.
You know, because there's in such positions where, you know, there should be something being said to the community, but it's not being said the right way, and he just goes in there and says what needs to be said.
Yes.
I think we all know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, I do.
So, all right. The Ushtabi, which is, of course, for this Pokemon Slayer game, now displays the soul of the monster inside on the tooltip.
That's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brawling gloves now show the amount of XP remaining on their tooltip. Pulse cores now show the amount of XP remaining. The Grim Gym now displays the current Reaper assignment and how many are left to kill on its tooltip.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good job, Mod Shawnee.
I agree. Jeez. I agree. The following have been added to all Slayer masks in terms of tooltips. Kills against the relevant creature. Days until the task can be forced for masks with a 3-day cooldown.
Oh,
and this will
so
appear
cool.
when first using the mask to force a task.
Oh, that's huge. That's great because... I forget all the time, and I'll take my mask out, and it'll be like, hey, you can't do it yet. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Gotta go back, you know? It's
like, no.
Okay. Very cool.
I actually got the Ganodermic mask last weekend.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you get that from Shattered Worlds?
No, I didn't. It actually just came to me through Treasure Hunter.
Oh, all right. Cool, cool. That's a good mask.
Yeah, yeah. That
especially
one,
for
the Dark Beast one,
you're
and the
farmer,
one.
You know, that'll be great for seeds.
Mixed feelings about that.
I knew you would.
Yeah. Now some quality of life changes for Dungeoneering. The Dungeoneering map has now been separated into its own top-level interface layer and can be moved around via edit mode and gameplay HUDs. So this is, of course, where you can move, you know, all the huge interfaces that you can't normally drag around, you know, if you're just sitting in game. So I don't think many of us go into the edit mode that often, but you can actually adjust the position of a lot of things in there. That's how you move the buff bar, mm-hmm. for example. So the Dungeoneering map can now be moved, which is something a lot of people have been wanting. And, you know, it felt so, so forcefully integrated before. So this is a very
yeah.
good fix.
Now, if we can get it to where you could have that open while you're dungeoning, then we'd be talking.
Yeah.
Could really cruise then.
Well, they also put in a ninja fix for the map that'll also make it remember if it was previously opened when starting a new Dungeoneering floor.
Oh, that's cool.
So if it was previously opened, it will stay up.
Okay. That's cool.
And I think that's a good step towards where you want to be, right?
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
So, because if you close it, it's closed for good. But if you leave it open, hey, you get to keep it up for that entire dungeon run. All right. And the Halloween event for this year has disappeared. Ghosts of Ghilinor have now been laid to rest permanently, leading to closure to also depart from the realm of the living. Their stories will last forever in adventurers who have heard them and can also be reclaimed via Diango. So, of course, this is the poll that was made about whether or not that update should be made permanent. And obviously, with this result here, that was not successful. So,
nobody cared.
What did you think of that? And what did you vote in that poll?
Well, what I think and what I vote are sometimes not the same thing.
All right. Well, what did you vote?
I mean, I vote to keep it just because I hate to see development time wasted like that. I just hate that.
Yeah.
But It wasn't an event for me. It wasn't my kind of
Yeah,
holiday event.
it was lore heavy, and I mean, we liked it on that week of the podcast, but that is because we had questers on that week.
Right, yeah.
So, all right. So here's something that has really that is really painful to see in these patch notes. Players can now choose whether or not Revolution activates basic, threshold, or ultimate abilities in the combat settings interface. Now, you might be asking, why is this the case? Well, here's what happens. You turn everything off. You turn the basics, thresholds, and ultimates off. You're left with basic combat attacks, and there's still a little golden bar at the bottom of the screen in your action bar. So it just doesn't make sense, because if you turn basics, thresholds, and ultimates off, what is Revolution doing? If you turn all three off, that checkbox on the in that menu should go back to full manual mode.
Yeah, this sounds like is this a sneaky way to do the what was it called? It was before
Momentum?
Legacy, and it was trash.
Yeah, this is
Do you
what
remember
that.
what?
Yeah,
Yeah,
momentum. That's what this effectively
momentum.
is.
Yeah.
Because all you get is basic attacks. You don't get any abilities. You don't get any huge spikes of damage. It doesn't make sense why this would be the case. And this is a horrible example of a way that people control someone, is that, you have someone in the same room as you who's playing RuneScape, and they're about to go kill Nekz or Araxar, for example, and you, well, maybe not Araxar. I don't think you'd use Revolution there. Let's just say you're going to God Wars Dungeon 1, because I think that is something you could use Revolution for, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Let's just say you're going for God Wars Dungeon 1. That's more palatable. So you turn off basics, thresholds, and ultimates. Let's just say you get up to go to the bathroom and your brother turns that off, and you go in to fight General Gradar, and you got nothing but basic attacks, and you're in this attack window and you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. The bar is golden at the bottom with the little golden ring around it. You're expecting a revolution to happen. You got to find the combat settings interface, and you got to re-toggle whether you want basics, thresholds, and ultimates to make that happen. This is an example of very poor user experience here, and this is something that a user experience czar would take great defect with, because you're turning off the core feature of Revolution. Revolution's core goal, I think, you can tell me if I'm wrong with this, is to activate abilities automatically, right?
I'm pretty sure that was the idea, yeah.
And if it's not activating any abilities automatically, well, perhaps you should just kick the combat mode back to full manual.
Yeah, what was the point? To me, it doesn't make any sense. And I wondered though, because when it went to Revolution Plus, I never felt like my stuff was going off at the right times, like ever. So I didn't know if like maybe something was weird with that, or if I mean, obviously you have to rearrange some things. So
Yeah,
I,
you have to
you
put the
know,
thresholds first because they have longer
right.
cooldowns.
But even then, it didn't seem like they were really catching. So I didn't know. I thought maybe this was related to that, but I mean, obviously not. If it's just an option to turn everything off, that really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
Now we got a toggle though.
I have found great use of the new Revolution for things like Dark Beasts and Abyssals, because those are very lean back creatures. You can enable thresholds and get another free automatically activating area of effect ability.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So that's the way I've been using it. But just to summarize, I think, if a person goes into the combat settings, turns off basic, threshold, and ultimate, all three of them, then the user interface should kick you back to full manual mode, because that is what the point of Revolution is, and you're just creating extra confusion within the user interface. What you can do is you can look at any application from Microsoft, for example. Like, if you go into one of the child menus of Microsoft Word and you adjust the spacing or the formatting of a specific paragraph, if you make that paragraph bold by going into a child menu, the bold button on the central toolbar in Microsoft Word will activate and show that as bold. And that's the same thing that's happening here, is that, you know, you are effectively turning off Revolution by unchecking these three checkboxes. This is a user interface not catching up with what is the true state of the game at this point, in my view. Because there's nothing you get from Revolution if you're not activating any abilities. So,
yeah, totally agree.
Hopefully that's clear. Yeah. So, yeah, just be careful if you're wondering why things aren't activating. You need to check the combat settings tab. Someone has played a horrible joke on you. All right. So moving on beyond that, the missing level 55 defense requirements have been added to Sarah Doman, Zamorak, and Guthig's Godbows. All right. Not that we missed them, but that's fine.
Right.
A cabbage in the Falador cabbage patch that took some time off during Easter 2017 has returned, feeling refreshed and no more or no less delicious.
They do love their cabbage, don't they?
Yes, they do. And they end this patch note with saying, Brassica Prime be praised. Peace be upon him. All right. Now, here's something going back to Menaphos as well. The gloves of passage drop rate has been increased to 1 out of 500. Previously, it was 1 in 2,000.
That's quite the change, but I think it's necessary.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, when you're talking about a magnitude of 4 like that, yeah. And I think it makes sense because if I recall, the Magister was kind of designed to be a Queen Black Dragon-esque kind of fight. And you don't want things being so stupidly rare from that, especially when you're paying keys to have the ability to fight it, right?
And I think that's – yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. Because the Magister is a challenging fight. I fully went into it not expecting to be able to even get the kill right away, but I did. And so that being said, like, I expect it to be like that QBD style. If I can do it, then over time I should be able to get something. And I never got anything.
Yeah.
Never got anything. And so you're just losing money, just continuously bleeding money.
Yeah. And I think they need to do that because that kind of keeps a high level focus that happens at in Menaphos for people who aren't necessarily enamored with the rep system and all that. So. All right, now here's something people have been wanting for a long time. Permanent gold accumulator added to game. Damonheim reward shop, 1.5 million reward points. So
I love it. I love it so much, but I don't have enough tokens.
Yeah,
I need tokens.
What's your dungeoneering level?
120.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have thought someone who would have went to 120 would add enough for that.
They would if they didn't spend 2 mil to finish off 120 because they hated Dunge.
Okay. Fair enough.
So that's how that happened. Well, and like the very last floor I ever planned to do, I got the pet. So I'm like, ooh. Oh, this is awesome. I never have to dunge again. And then they came out with this. I'm like, oh, you bastards.
Well, like, sinkholes. What are you doing to me? Sinkholes, thieving in Prif.
Yeah.
Not you know, huge ways to get tokens, but something at least. So.
You know, and the funny thing is I've been doing sinkholes and people are actually fighting over the token.
Right?
I saw a guy in first like trade somebody for tokens. I'm like, wow. You never saw that before. It's great.
All right. The quick prayer interface can now be used in combat. Previously, it couldn't. And of course, the quick prayer interface is the one that allows you to drag various prayer presets down to your action bar and set up what prayers you want to active, which is good because I mean you might forget to set something as you go in, and you can just pop it up as you go. So, very good change.
Yeah, very nice.
Now here's perhaps my favorite patch note of the week: luck rings and items now state which items were received, including items from the rare drop table, when informing the player that the item shone brightly. So no more. Your luck of the dwarves shines brightly, and you have to figure out what the heck exactly you got as an extra item. So this is good because, you know, I don't know if you've been in the same boat, but you have this ring and it just seems to shine every other kill, but you have no idea what you're getting, right?
You're preaching to the choir, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea.
Also, will be
I
very.
I show up at the bank. I'm like, where'd this come from?
Yeah. Also, will be very interesting for treasure trails as well, because it works with that, of course. So.
Yeah.
That's a great change. Tier 90 boot component drops from the rune dragons and elite rune dragons are now more common, which makes sense because, I mean, who thinks of rune dragons and thinks of that as being a source to get tier 90 boots, right?
Yeah. And they've always been a little too expensive, in my opinion, for what it is.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Luck messaging will now display next Angel of Death, God Wars Dungeon 2, and other areas. Obviously, it didn't before, so those of you guys who frequent those areas will be very happy. Raxi will now generate loot drops when clicking on her corpse instead of when she dies to bring her in line with other boss drops. And XP rewards from the Restless Ghost, What Lies Below, Defender of Rock, and the Fremenic Trials quests are now given in the form of lamps, which is following up from last week's patch note. So... I think the Araxi change is good. You know, it lets you grab the loot on your own pace and you don't get forced to choosing it when it's time. So very good. Lamps, I'm assuming the fact it didn't mention in the patch notes that these don't have any, requirement to use. So, because that was a huge discussion point last week, is that, you know, we're making these have, requirements, but hey, we're not exactly looking at what the requirements are for these, so I'm assuming there are no requirements on these. But all right, I think that's it for the patch notes, unless there's any that I missed that you want to go through.
No, man, I think that was pretty thorough, and it was definitely a patch week, huh?
Yeah, and lots of good ones too. I mean, you might look at these weeks and see them as kind of blah, but it works.
You know, there's a lot packed into it. You know, the tooltips are great, and luck, and some of the other little changes, you know, it's just quality of life stuff, but it makes a difference when you look back on it. That gold accumulator, I want it so bad. See, here we go, Shane. Once again, did Jagex mean to make an accessibility update? No. Is that going to make my life easier? Yes. A lot easier.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I never thought of it as an accessibility update.
Yeah. They always do this. They don't mean to, but
yeah. And I think the last one was the filters, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, that makes me happy. All right. So next up is a little competition. Jagex doesn't run these competitions as much as they used to. This one is called the Abbey Road Competition. So this one is, of course, centered around RuneScape music. So what they're doing is, of course, they highlight that RuneScape holds the Guinness World Record for the highest volume of original music tracks in-game, 1,202 at the point of writing. And on December 12th, they're going to be at Abbey Road Studio for an exclusive recording session, and they say you and a friend could be there to enjoy every second of it, all expenses paid. And what they want to know is, which RuneScape music track is your favorite and why? Does it evoke a special memory? Does it remind you of an in-game milestone? Or is it just a brilliant piece of music? You can post on Twitter, Reddit, or Instagram, or the forums, and just use the hashtag MyRuneScapeSong. So... and, you know, we were talking a bit about music here relating to this. So you have until Wednesday, November 22nd to enter. You need to sign an NDA if you win, of course, because they're going to be recording music there. But I think that goes without saying. Let's see if there's any special terms and conditions, because I know one thing you and I are probably wondering is this limited at all to people only in the UK?
Oh,
let's see.
That is a really good question.
Because I don't know if they would fly someone out to London just for that. Let's see. Entry requirements. All results will be final. Let's see. Winners. You need to hold a valid passport. Let's see any word from here. United. If not made publicly available, the names of the winners can be made available by sending a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Jagex. Yeah, it doesn't say anything here that I can see about this.
If you need a passport and you said something about United, you'd be flying United. I mean, it would make you think that it would be okay.
Well, no, United Kingdom is where it's
at. Oh, United Kingdom, yeah, wow.
Yeah, I can't see anything if it's available. No, I mean, I don't think it would make sense to put a competition out there.
Especially when you can just not say anything and pick someone from the UK anyway.
Oh, I mean, how are they to know
just what they're
from the UK, right?
If you were going to be sneaky about it, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's good though. We don't have to call, you know, hemisphere discrimination. So we're good so far.
Indeed. So what is your favorite RuneScape music track?
I think it's just the opening number of the old RS2 when you first start, it's either that or it's Lumbridge. Like when you first got off of Tutorial Island and you first land in Lumbridge, which I think I'm pretty sure you said it's called The Town. What's the track?
Newbie Melody.
Melody, okay. It just brings back memories. For me, it's iconic. It's like, you know, there's gaming music that it's just, you think of the game and the song is in your head. And that's one of those for me.
Yeah. Okay. And of course, I mean, I think everyone, of course, also remembers the old RuneScape 2 loading screen music as well. Because that's something that there's an interesting story about this. Is, you know, when RuneScape 2 came out, I was playing on Windows mostly, and of course we had sound back then, and RuneScape 2 having sounds that were full stereo compared to RuneScape Classic was a big deal at the time. And a number of years later, about a year and a half later, I ended up going to the Mac platform, and for a good amount of time playing through Firefox and that Java applet, there were no real sounds on RuneScape, so... for a while, there was no music in RuneScape for me. And if you look back at RuneScape also, you talk to so many people and they back in the day would just turn the music off completely and, you know, wouldn't even play through it for quests. But as the game evolved and as the game got more mature, the amount of production quality that went into that was just downright amazing. So,
yeah.
And you know, I make it a point now whenever there's a new event or a new quest to turn the music on and see what they produced for that, because it's most of the time a really big deal. So,
well, and think of all of the just awesome tracks you would miss if you had it off. Like, what's the quest with all the singing, the cathedral, the one piercing note,
that
was so good.
Yeah, I have that here too.
The other one that you shared with the Walgothic's
Temple Sleet? Desecrated.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of really good tracks that you only find in quests, so you're only going to get to hear it, you know, that first time when you're going through.
Yeah. So for me, it would have to be either or Temple Desecrated or the Christmas RuneScape track, which, you know, for a number of years, they stopped putting in game, but I think they have started putting it in game, I think, back in 2015 with a remastered version. So it's always nice to hear that once December comes around. So either Escape Santa or Temple Desecrated for me would be my two favorites. But yeah, if you have a favorite and you want to tell JagXY, just enter forums, Twitter, or Instagram. My RuneScape song is the hashtag. So, and let's
And how cool! I mean, a chance to go to Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, wow.
And the fact JagX is using that for recording, that really says something.
Yeah. It does.
Now, let's just take a moment here and appreciate Temple Desecrated. And when you look back and you think of this quest, while Guthix sleeps, was really the jumping off point for so many of the storylines that we really started to enjoy. I mean, yeah. Lucien, the Majorat, the gods in some ways as well. So, Temple Desecrated is really important.
I mean, it was the lead into the sixth stage.
Exactly.
I mean, setting things up. RIP Guthix, you know?
Yep. So. And it was also the first Grandmaster quest released in November of 2008.
Wow.
So, very famous.
Yeah.
All right. So, that's the Abbey Road competition. And that was posted here, and you have until November 22nd to enter that in, so just under 1 week. Moving on from that, Going Like Clockwork is in the game, and this is the event that was announced last week, but of course didn't arrive until this week. In-game from November 13th until the 26th, this is the Christmas warm-up event. It's another one of those community events where you get little trinkets while skilling and PVMing and completing daily challenges, catching snow implings. You get 10,000 of them and you unlock all the various cosmetics that are available, and also a chance at mystery boxes along the way. And one thing I think that most people aren't aware of for this is that if you look at the mystery boxes that are available for Going Like Clockwork, you have a chance to get the holiday loot beam that was in game two Christmases ago.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, I need that one. Oh, yeah. My lord, that one.
So it can come
so
from
good.
Either mystery boxes or buying it on the Grand Exchange.
Oh, I could buy it now?
Yep, you can buy it on the exchange.
Oh, yes. You don't understand. That's another one of those accessibility updates that you don't really think about. But when you have a gigantic freaking present on your screen, you're pretty sure you caught something or you got something good. So that's it's so much easier to see. I want that.
Yeah.
I want that right now.
According to the GE inventory, it's going for 1.8 mil right now, but with the amount coming in game, it's probably going to be a little bit cheaper.
That's a steal. I'd pay 10 times that. I mean, that's awesome.
Other things you can get from this are the Snoverload plushie, the Mammoth Putt plushie, the Penguin plushie, Buddy the Pet, which, of course, if you look back on that. That's the Christmas, I guess.
I've been keeping him in my house.
Christmas goblin.
Little bastard must have snuck out or something. I don't know. He's no longer a house elf, huh?
Yeah. You can also get the rubber turkey and the offhand rubber turkey as well.
Oh, I don't have. Do you have any of the rubber turkey?
No, I don't. They're not really a thing that are for me. So
I don't have them either, but
no. All right. So there's also, of course, one other caveat with this event, and this one, just like all the other events, since Menaphos are unlimited. So
that's good.
Yeah, it's good to a point, but if you cross that 10,000 threshold and you just keep stacking up on these and stacking up on them, and you convert them to something other than holiday event rewards,
yeah,
you get a ton of bonus XP, you get a ton of cash, and you get a ton of Dungeoneering tokens as well.
What?
Yeah, you can get Dungeoneering tokens from this. And I have heard of people getting millions of XP and millions of GP from just converting the amount that they get from this. So this is something we've been talking about before with the previous ones, the previous events like this, is that they really need to look into limiting the amounts you can get after you hit 10,000. Because, you know, everyone likes to complain about microtransactions and whatnot, but these are worse than microtransactions for the amount of bonus XP they give you.
Well, and I think the situation Jagex finds itself in is you want it to be unlimited so that you don't feel like it's a chore every day. But the minute that you do that, you run into the problem that you're describing, where you have millions and millions of bonus experience and cash and prizes, and really, did you do anything any different than you would have done any other day?
No.
So there has to be a solution, but I'm not.
The simple solution,
I'm really not sure what it is.
Is to just cap it and make it limited to 1,000 a day once you hit 10,000.
Once you hit 10,000, okay, I would be willing to go with once you hit the 10,000, because I just, I hate the daily scape grind where you feel like you're doing your chores and you feel like you get on and you have to do X, Y, and Z, and once you get done, by the time you get home from work and you take, just whatever you have going on, you only have however many hours to play. If you're taking 2 hours of doing all these chores, you might get to do what you want for an hour. If that.
Yep.
And that, it just sucks. I hate that feeling.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing they have learned is that they don't want to be pigeonholing people to need to be forced to complete these. And they just give it for everything now. Yeah. So, but nonetheless, that would be a good thing to look at going forward. But buy the Christmas Loot Beam. That's something we can all we can all look forward to. Something else we can all look forward to, something that's happening this weekend, is the Dimension of the Damned finale.
Mm-hmm.
On the 18th at 8 p.m. GMT. Still happening as far as we know.
We haven't. Well, the last two times it was postponed 2 days before. So we're 2 days before and I haven't seen an email yet. So fingers crossed, we're going to make it. I think they should do it come hell or high water. Get it, do it. Let the chips fall where they will.
I was looking at the postings that were made about Dimension of the Damned, and they said that, for RS3, this is effectively a pilot, and that's why most of the rewards and prizes they're giving are in-game based. And if it was successful, like old school Dead Man is successful, then they would look at expanding out beyond that and making the prizes even more lucrative.
See, the problem is I feel like it would have been successful. Maybe it still will be, but they've done a lot of damage to it. No matter how things turn out on Saturday, they have inflicted these are self-inflicted wounds. I think there was a lot of goodwill in the beginning. Had this been pulled off right, man, this would have been so exciting. I would have loved to seen a PvE-style Dead Man tournament. It would have been I would have loved it.
I'm not sure
that's what we have at this point. Maybe. I'll find out Saturday, but we'll see.
Fingers crossed. Just a reminder to everyone what everyone gets. The top 1,000 get the title The Damned. The top 50 received the Dimension of the Damned pet, as well as the title. The top 10 receive having their name on a statue in-game for 2 weeks. They also get a year of standard RS membership and everything else. The top 5 get an all-expense-paid trip to Jagex, Gold Premier Club for 2018 and everything above. And the winner gets 200 million GP, lifetime membership, first year being Gold Premier, the unique title King or Queen of the Damned, a real-life zombie award, and everything else. So, here's hoping that you make it to the top 50, Tanis.
Oh, thank you. I'm wanting top five. That's the goal.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
It's the top five because I want to go to the UK.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering, one thing that's going to be really interesting to me is to see how quickly everyone falls off.
I think it's going to depend on, you know, like we were talking earlier, everybody has a plan till they get punched in the mouth. That's what Mike Tyson used to say. I think people are going to have a plan, and then they're going to get outside of Falador, and the big bosses are going to start spawning, and that's it. You're dead. Game over.
Yeah.
And if you catch zombieism before you have time to have an antidote and before you've made that, you're done. That's game over.
Yeah.
So I don't think the calling is going to be as big of a problem as, I don't know. I'm just going to push Tycho out in front of me and let him.
You hear that, Tycho?
While I run the other way.
So, you know, one other thing I'm going to be looking out for on this is ensuring that people don't try denial of service the RuneScape servers, because, you know, that has happened before. So
it has, and it, you know, it could happen. And I'm not sure how they get around that. I don't know what you do to protect your competitors from that.
Lots of unique load balancing on your servers and the routing that your connections take coming into your servers. So, yeah. Based on what I know, based on just looking at the locations of the data centers, based on where the connections terminate, because you can do this. You can basically run a ping command to any of the RuneScape servers, and that'll give you an IP address. Then you can look that IP address up, and you'll see what state it's in, if it's in the US or where it is in the EU. And then basically what that means is that if it's at one of these large data centers, what Jagex needs to do is they need to ensure that the amount of bandwidth that they have available for that day is going to be sufficient enough to handle all of the incoming traffic, and that any suspect traffic will get dropped before it reaches their servers. So that's what they're probably thinking of behind the scenes when it comes to that. So it should be something that's easily combatable, because it's something that large websites deal with every day.
Yeah, well, that would be great. And hopefully they've learned something from the OSRS, you know, trials and tribulations, where they were offering serious money, and they had a lot of those attacks.
All right, good luck, Tanis.
Thank you. I'm probably going to need it, but
we'll see where you guys all end up next week.
I'm a survivor.
There you go. And one more thing with that, on Black Friday weekend, starting Friday, November 24th, and ending Monday, November 27th at midday, rather than a bonus XP weekend, Jagex is running a free weekend. So for RuneScape 3, not old school, anyone who doesn't have membership currently will be able to access everything in-game for free. Everything. So,
which is cool, but here's my question. Like, so you're offering this free weekend. That's great. But how do people that don't play RuneScape, how are they going to know that they can play RuneScape for free that weekend?
Well, if they're registered if they registered their account with an email address, I'm assuming Jagex will be sending out an email to free-to-play players.
But what if you're not on free-to-play, you've never heard of RuneScape? It seems to me like this would be a golden opportunity to try to. Hey, come over here, guys. Check out RuneScape. But, like, do they do any advertising? Like,
I've seen RuneScape ads on YouTube.
You have? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's YouTube. Good.
I've also seen Google ads before. So,
okay.
I mean, if they really wanted to, they could put some ads out for this and get it out in the appropriate communities.
And, yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense, you know?
That would really be a great thing to do. But at the same time, you know, I'm just not convinced of the value of online advertising anymore, especially in a gaming community that is technologically savvy compared to, you know, console players. And I'm not saying console players are dumb with that. I'm just saying that if you play on PC, you're more likely to know about an ad blocker than if you play on a console.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that, but yeah, you got a good point there.
Yeah. And, you know, this opens up a huge can of worms for other stuff as well, because, you know, if you look back at the Jagex financial reports, which I cited when I wrote that great article, The Reality of Microtransactions, which everyone should read at informer.rsbnb.com if you have any questions about microtransactions. I also posted it on the Clan Quest forums for those of you guys who are members of Clan Quest. But in that report, they did also talk about their advertising revenue that they got from ads and whatnot. And, you know, as expected, advertising revenue was really, really small.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's ads that, you know, run in the free-to-play game and run on the RuneScape website. Really small. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is how RuneScape was initially funded. And here we are in 2017, and it's not a viable way to fund things anymore. So.
Something no, I just wonder if they'll ever, forward. You know, get on a large marketplace type platform where you're going to look at games. Where if you're just like you're window surfing, I wonder what free to play stuff is out there. You know, like, you know what I mean? I mean, sometimes you get bored and you just kind of start looking through Steam or whatever, and be like, what's new?
Lots of
you know, that
on
kind
Steam
of thing.
Too.
I don't know.
But you know, the best opportunity for Jagex to do this is mobile.
That's true.
Because if they ship mobile and they can get it featured in the iTunes store and the Play Store for, you know, a weekend, that will bring in a huge amount of people to try the game.
That is true.
And with people knowing that there's also a web version that they can play, they just go to runescape.com, click a few buttons, and away you go. And pick up their progress right where they left off. If they like what they see on their phones, they're going to jump right onto it with their computers as well. So,
and think back, it doesn't take much to get you hooked on
RuneScape. Exactly.
It really doesn't. You know, helping out a cook and making some bread, and you're like, yeah, I like this. I want to play this game more.
Mobile is going to be the modern version of Miniclip for RuneScape.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, I mean, boy, could you imagine if the – what they would do if people already had mobile with this, what that would mean. I think when mobile launches on the platforms, they should do a free weekend.
Oh, for sure.
A bonus XP weekend for those people. I guess you'd have to do it for everyone. And that would kind of, you know, coincide with February if we're thinking when it's going to be released. Mm-hmm. So.
And that would also be good because you're gonna maximize the amount of people that you got on to playing. You know, it's maximizing the interactions. Why don't they put us in charge, Shane? We could help. Just we got this.
Oh boy, you have no idea how much we have thought about that here at the podcast. okay, well, that's pretty much it for this week's RS content, unless you have anything else.
No, that's all I got for this week.
All right, we're going to move on to questions then. We got two of them this week. The first one is from Whitey. So Whitey says, how do you feel about old school getting sequel quests like Monkey Madness 2 and Dragon Slayer 2? Do you think it would be good if RS3 followed a similar trend? Because the community seems to dislike questing, this may be a good way to bring light to how fun quests can be. Cheers, Whitey. So, what do you think?
Well, it's kind of hard because I wouldn't have thought that the old school community was very much on questing, but I guess
same.
I could be wrong. Okay. I think that the reason they're getting the sequels is they don't have the same storylines, the big, huge storylines that we have in RS3.
Yes,
I
that's
don't think it's a
correct.
matter of one community liking it more than the other, because generally, I think the questing community is a small but dedicated community.
Oh, yeah. You have no idea how much the people in Clan Quest would jump up and down for Monkey Madness 2 or Dragon Slayer 2.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I would love to see Dragon Slayer 2. Monkey Madness 2, they can keep that. But Dragon Slayer 2, that'd be cool. And I almost wonder, I don't want to say it's getting wasted on OS, but it's kind of how I feel. I don't know.
Maybe, maybe. And you know, one thing I think why we haven't seen Monkey Madness 2 in RS3 is because we already have a spiritual successor to Monkey Madness in RuneScape 3. I'm trying to remember the name of the quest, but it was the Monkey Hybrid Desert quest that kind of brought those two storylines together. And those were, in effect, sequels to one another. Do No
That's
Evil.
true.
Do No
What was
Evil.
it was the one with the chimp ice, right? And you had
Yeah,
to
Do No Evil was effectively a
do no evil.
sequel to Monkey Madness. Not only in that it dealt with the monkeys and what we first heard about in Monkey Madness, but it was also a very, very long quest, just like Monkey Madness was. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason we haven't seen Monkey Madness 2. It'd be kind of hard to shoehorn that in the lore sense now, but
Yeah, that is a good point. I never thought about that either.
yeah. But Dragon Slayer 2, they could definitely do because, you know, we have so much more lore now about how the dragons were created, the dragon riders, the dragon kin, for example. Everything dragon related in RuneScape, we know so much more about than when the initial Dragon Slayer quest came out, that you really could do a very good quest about that. Let's see. I believe it was called One of a Kind was the Dragonkin quest, and that dealt with one of the dragon riders. So, and
And
if
he's out there, right?
he's
He went
out there,
home.
and we had a choice to either let him die or send him home, we sent him home, and we never really did follow up on that. So that is somewhere that we could go in the future. So, if you look at the way that the Dragonkin quest series go, the next one they called Heroes Welcome at Dragonkin quest.
I know, and I don't, yeah.
We had a real good laugh about that, how you end up with a Fremenic quest and it turns out to be Dragonkin related.
It's like if the Dragonkin kills someone. Yep, it's a Dragonkin quest. Spoiler alert. But
Yeah. So, I mean, the sequel to Heroes Welcome and dealing with the Dragonkin, you know, that is definitely somewhere that Jagex could go, and there's no reason why I think it couldn't be called Dragon Slayer 2.
And we have so many. We have a lot more dragons than we had back then. I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised to see even more in the future. So I mean, there really could be a lot more done with that.
Yeah.
And I think this would be interesting. Yeah, you could put the dragonkin in it. It would be interesting. I think it's a little more interesting than where the dragonkin are right now, because just where they're at right now, for whatever reason, to me, it's just kind of unsatisfying. I don't feel like they're as tied to dragons as they should be. They're called Dragonkin. I want to know more. I want the
Yeah,
ins and the outs of
yeah.
that.
I agree.
So.
And I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, we only had one Six Age quest this year, and that was Back to the Freezer, the Penguin quest. So there's definitely
Woohoo.
room to add on with that. But you know, just to summarize here, I think the reason we haven't seen Monkey Madness 2 is because the successor, at least the spiritual successor to Monkey Madness, was put into game with Do No Evil, and that is kind of Monkey Madness 2, though not in the same sense. But yeah, definitely in regards to Dragon Slayer 2, there's lots that can be done with that. Thank you, Whitey.
Yeah, good question.
And this next one is from Trekkie. So, which character on RS would you like to see annihilated? Not just poof, character's gone. I mean, complete and utter destruction of life as you know it. And how would you do it? Would your character fall off a cliff and get impaled by rocks, or get eaten alive by giant spiders, or in a battle and get roasted by a giant fireball? All right.
Well, you know, the one character that I wanted to see die died, but Yelps is no more, but we could put his successor, although I don't know if anyone knows the name, but the little treasure hunter dude or chick or whatever it is.
I know her name.
I could see them getting the axe.
I forget what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're so kind of insignificant, but it would still be cool. And I want to see, like, cut him into five pieces and put one piece in each treasure chest. How about that?
Oh, that'd be pretty funny. All right. For me, it would be Meg.
Meg. Do tell how you would do her in.
I would have the player send her off on an adventure, and no matter how hard the player tries to keep her alive, she messes up so horribly that she dies a very, very painful death.
That would be hilarious. She just keeps almost dying until she finally dies.
You know, there was a quest she was in as one of the support characters, and I thought, oh, maybe this is our chance. Maybe Meg will die in this quest. But nope, she did not.
No.
Kindred spirits. Yeah, I tried to kill her in that quest, but it obviously couldn't.
Well, they can't keep offing the female leads, right? Because they've already offed Linza. They offed Arion. They've offed her too.
Like, I'm sure you could find more.
I mean, they keep killing the female leads.
She's just so annoying, though.
She is annoying. I'll give you that.
Oh, God-wise, if we could... And I'm thinking to the next biggest thing that might happen. You know, if Jagex really did want to jump the shark, I'm not suggesting that they do this because this would probably end very badly given the community's reaction. I would say the next god that probably should be offed is Zaros, if at all possible, by another god.
Dude. Oh, my Lord. It'd just be Riot. Just Riot. Like...
Yeah, and perhaps that would be going too far.
If you kill the gods off, kill them all off. Like, I'd love to see them just all, bam, done.
Then the godless would win. Yeah. And we haven't really seen much of them, have we?
We haven't. They just all of a sudden come back. Like, all the gods are in one place. See, they could have done this with Sliski's in-game. Like, they're all in the same place at the same time. Just, boom, off them all.
Massacre.
Yeah. I think we'll see the... I don't know. I mean, can you see the Elder Gods gone? I mean, can you kill?
Actually,
that would be weird. But.
You know, if the Elder Gods were to kill Zaros, they would kill him wherever he was, and he is on Gelenor, and that would probably mean the death and destruction of Gelenor as it is, based on how the Elder Gods work.
Yeah,
that might not be a good idea after all.
Yeah, nothing to them. Of course, they're on Gelenor too, so...
Yeah, in the form of inanimate objects. I really want that storyline to continue, though.
So. I'm ready for it to be tied up.
Yeah.
To be finished.
I agree. All right. Thank you, Trekkie, for that. Very, very amusing question. I think we both got our jollies for the day, did we not? All right. Well, with that being said, we're going to move on to tech news right now. But first, if you want to send your own questions in, email questions@rsbnb.com or call or text 571-57BNB. You can also leave us a DM on Twitter @RSBNB. So, tech news this week. iPhone X came out a few weeks ago. The iPhone X has the revolutionary new technology, as Apple would like to put it, for facial recognition rather than using your fingerprint to unlock the device. You know, initially this looked kind of gimmicky. We saw the results last year when Samsung released their phone, the one that didn't explode, that had that had facial recognition, and it was able to be tricked by a picture of someone. And, you know, that's because Samsung effectively used basic image recognition and they didn't look at the 3D model of someone's face. And as a result of that, they did end up being able to trick that. But the iPhone X uses 3D facial mapping with the various cameras it has in its camera array. And it turns out that this past week, last Friday, a Vietnamese security firm named Bacob released a blog post and video that shows that they were cracking Face ID by using, you ready for this? A simple 3D printed plastic mask combined with silicone and makeup and simple paper cutouts. So with a little bit of 3D printing technology, some prosthetics, they were able to unlock the iPhone X. It wasn't confirmed publicly by other security researchers, but it does raise questions, you know, about, you know, if you can get it, if you can get an accurate 3D map of someone's face and you can print out a prosthetic that makes it look like their face, you know, silicone mask, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could unlock the device.
Well, I'm glad that I thought this was a bad idea since the first time I heard about it. So there you go. It is.
See,
you know, I mean, it's a lot harder to get someone's fingerprint.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to need to see from this point about whether or not this can happen in a much simpler way. You know, like, is there a way to use the data that comes from the animated emoji, for example, and use that to generate a 3D mask and then print that out and unlock someone's phone? So there's that.
Okay, this is kind of conspiratorial here, but remember, like, a while back, I think I was even on the podcast when we were talking about how Apple was fighting about not creating a backdoor so that the FBI could get into whoever's phone that they really right. wanted to because they really needed to. Now all they need is a silicone mask.
Yeah. That's actually a good point.
Noticing a problem here. Like, it's like a backdoor without saying, hey, we put in a backdoor.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes down to fingerprint recognition compared to facial recognition, with fingerprint, you actually had to have a mold of the fingerprint because it was very, very hard to duplicate someone's fingerprint by just, you know, using a fingerprint the same way forensics does, because that is only a 2D representation, whereas the fingerprint technology in the iPhones previously looked at the 3D structure of the finger. It could scan below the skin. So that's what the benefit of that was. Whereas with this, I mean, all you need to do is you need to basically put someone down and you can build a mask from them. I'm not saying this is going to be a major issue because, I mean, how many times is someone going to do this, right? But it just raises questions going forward about the technology. And I mean, maybe that is the way it's supposed to be broken. I don't know.
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just another reason. I wasn't a big fan of this phone to begin with, and I'm an iPhone user. So this is just more reason that I'm going to skip, set this one out.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I think they'll be going to facial recognition for all of them in the future based on what the supply chains are looking like for next year and the following year. So,
well, that's too bad. I'm going to be like one of them old people that still has a flip phone, you know. Mine will be like an iPhone. You still got the 6 Plus? Yeah. Still got my fingerprint.
Yeah. another thing with the facial recognition of the iPhone X that's been found is that if you have an identical twin, it works. Or if you can get brothers and sisters with similar facial structures, that works as well.
It's just so bad. It's just so bad.
And they need to look fairly similar, you know?
Yeah. But even then, think about this. How many times have you been in a store and saw someone's doppelganger? I mean, it happens. Like it happens.
It needs to be very, very close, though.
But how close? Because some silicone and some crafting paper seems like that wouldn't have been too close. Mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about
We're gonna
this
have to
one.
wait and see. All right. So moving on from the iPhone X, we have, of course, the quote outrage regarding EA and the new Star Wars Battlefront game and the microtransactions that have become apparent since the game is nearing release. So for anyone who is not aware of what's happening here, EA is releasing a new Star Wars game this Friday, the shooter version in the Battlefront series, Star Wars Battlefront 2. And previously, you would be able to, sporadically throughout the game play as the va major heroes like Darth Vader. But now you need to pay extra money to accelerate the unlock of these characters. And it was estimated that prior to this, you would have had to play about 40 hours before you could unlock one of these characters.
And that's just, I mean, that's just one. Here's the problem for, I mean, Star Wars fans, you'll understand. They locked Luke and Vader behind 40 hours of play. That's ridiculous. What do you expect to play when you're playing Star Wars? They're like, hey, you finally have Darth Maul. Okay, well, we took Vader. What? No, I didn't agree to this. Like, and that's not even the, I mean, that's not the worst part too, because with the way Battlefront works, you have these star cards, and star cards are kind of like your different abilities, and there's different tiers of these, and they tied your star cards to the loot boxes, and being to craft the crafting materials to craft these cards. So that's a whole nother issue. So, but essentially, they've tied the your game progression to loot boxes.
And I would like to point out at this point in time that I has said when I talked about the reality of microtransactions for RuneScape that there are always more egregious examples of microtransactions. And here we are.
Yeah, that was actually, believe it or not, that your article came to mind like immediately when this started going down. And this has been, we've known there were some problems with that ever since the beta. But EA had backtracked a
EA
little
doesn't have a
bit.
good
They
track
said,
record.
okay, well, Epic Star Cards won't be available in the loot boxes. So you'll have to craft the Epic, which is the highest tier. Okay, that was something. It didn't fix it. But then they did. Then they locked the heroes behind an ungodly amount of credits. And on top of that, they also reduced the amount of credits you can get in the arcade mode to a daily limit, like it's a freaking mobile game. Now, this is a AAA title that you pay either $60 or $90 for. Like, it's ridiculous. And that's the rub there. Like, in a game that has microtransactions, that's a free-to-play game, we understand that and we expect that. But in a game that you pay that much money for, that's where the rebellion has came in, you know.
Now.
And it's just games as a service model that, you know, GTA 5 came out and just smashed it with this games as service model, and everyone has followed suit, and EA has taken it to the nth degree. And if you want to stop stuff like this, don't buy the loot boxes. Buy the game. The game's good. Like, it really is. But stop, don't give them more of your money. That's how you stop it. Speak with your money. Be a
Exactly.
good capitalist.
Exactly. And, for what it's worth, EA announced on Monday that it was reducing the cost for key characters by 75%. I don't know if that's enough. I don't know how much it's going to cost, but there is some movement on EA's front in regards to that. Now, I want to say that at the end of the day, when EA is looking at the numbers that are going to be coming from this game, and if they see an increase in profit from this ploy, then it is entirely successful. Now, With that being said, like you said, Tanis, if you don't like it, do not buy the microtransactions, because when you purchase this game, the amount of money that comes in to EA is split into two categories. You have the category from purchasing the game, and you have the category for microtransactions within the game. If EA sees that the microtransactions aren't taking off the way they would like them to, or they're relatively flat, they're going to backtrack, and you likely will not see something this egregious in the future going forward. And, you know, there's also reason that EA will look at this and see that, you know, this was could ultimately end up being a learning experience for them, even if it does result in increased profits, because this week it has been revealed that management and shareholders of EA are actually concerned about this, because they do not want to see what is going to happen to this in the future. They said, "We see recent controversies as a potential risk for unit sales versus buy-side expectations, although EA has conservative estimates for Battlefield or Battlefront Live services." So they already say it's going to be conservative estimates for it, but they still see it as a potential risk. So this is just not something that EA is rushing into head first, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just they've just laid their greed out there for people to see. It's one thing to have where they messed up was tying it to the progression. You know, the Star Wars universe is so huge. There's so much. It's so rich. You could have cosmetics forever. And it would have been. It would have been fun. That would have been totally okay. People would have been fine. But when you start tying people's progression, and they did it on purpose, because I learned this recently. I didn't even know this was a thing. But have you heard of whales? Just like at a casino, you know, the whales come in and no. They can just lay down huge amounts of money, and the casino like treats them like royalty. Apparently, there are whales in the gaming community. I didn't know that. That can just go in and they'll slap down however much money it takes. And EA was actually gunning for these guys, which blows my mind. I didn't even know that was a thing. So it's going to take a lot of us to not buy it to offset this. But, yeah. You know, it can be done, and give us customization. Give us cosmetics and customization. That no one would have had a problem with that.
That would have been Overwatch.
In fact, we want that.
Successful.
Like, do the Overwatch model. You know, like it worked. So why are you pushing it that much further? You know.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I also give EA total props for doing this, because the very key definition of entrepreneurship is taking a risk in order to make a profit or try something new. And they're doing this. And if it works, all the power to them. And if it blows up in their face, well, that was a failed experiment. So I think it's fine that they're doing it. And I think if people don't like it, you know, rather than complaining on the internet and generating the most downvoted Reddit comment ever, just don't buy the thing. Just don't buy the thing, you know? And don't buy the microtransactions. And, you know, after seeing that, how people were reacting, if I had been a Star Wars fan, this would have been more reason for me to buy and play the game.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
Like it really because, is. Like it's actually because, and that's the worst part of this whole thing. They did this with a game that was actually really good. The same thing happened with Shadow of War. The game is actually really good. And then I mean, it's not to this degree. It's not quite like this, but you know, they threw it into a single player game. And I think the gaming companies right now, they're really testing the waters. It's not just EA, but it's all of them, and they're trying to see how far they can push.
And you know, I give them credit for that. That's what you're supposed to do in an open market. And I mean, when it comes down to it, if you don't like it, don't buy it. And enough people feel that way, then that'll be a strong message to the company in question as to whether or not that strategy works out going forward.
Yeah, and if you really, really don't like it, like if you really want to, you know, give them a black eye, support indie games.
Yeah, there's a good option as well. They actually need the support now because they're getting really hard to find good ones with all the garbage that's out there on Steam.
Yep, there's a lot of garbage, and they're getting squeezed on both ends because the big boys don't like to don't like them playing in their sandbox either.
Yeah.
So.
Now, and you know, this is just basic market tendencies, and I really don't like it when people shame a company for trying to make a buck, because that's what companies are supposed to do.
But that's the yin and the yang, Shane. You know, I mean, sure, that's what they're supposed to do, but this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to shame them if we don't like it, right?
Right, and that's the beauty of capitalism and why it's outsurvived other economic systems for hundreds of years. So,
well, you know, it's like they say, what, right? It's the best system that we have, except, or how's that go?
It's the best system we have because no better one has been discovered yet.
Or everything else has been tried.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I can't remember how it goes, but yeah.
All right, moving on to our next piece of tech news, and this tech news reads as, a nearby Earth-sized planet may have habitable conditions for life, and you might be wondering, whoa, didn't we hear about this before? Well, yeah, we did, except this one's a lot closer than anything we've seen before. This planet was found orbiting a red dwarf star called Ross 128, roughly 11 light years away from Earth.
So close.
Yeah, it is. Because
that is so close.
You might think, okay, 11 light years, that's still really far. But our next closest star, Alpha Centauri, is 4.2 light years away. So this is roughly three times the distance as Alpha Centauri. And we could, theoretically, if we wanted to, get a signal, a radio signal to Ross 128 in 11 years, which is a lot shorter compared to where some of the other potential habitable planets have been found, you know, 40 light years away, 200 light years away, just recalling a few of the other more recent ones. But astronomers are pretty certain that they have discovered an Earth-sized planet around a small red dwarf star. And, you know, if you are wondering where this red dwarf star is, you can actually see it in the night sky. Ross 128 is in the constellation Virgo and is in the very center of this picture in the article. So it is – it's this bright red dot right here. And the fact we can see it with – our own eyes and, you know, a basic telescope really says something that we are truly on the cusp of, to coin a phrase, discovering strange new worlds. So what is thought of Ross 128 system is that this planet orbits its sun a lot closer, even closer than Mercury, roughly, I think it's one quarter the distance of what Mercury orbits compared to our sun. So it's really close, but because of the way the star works, that is actually within the habitable zone of that star. We don't know exactly what the atmospheric conditions of the planet are, if they're something that could be habitable. That'll be determined later on when future telescopes are able to look directly at the star and the planet there to determine what its atmosphere consists of. And that's what the next generation of telescopes is going to be able to do, is to look at these nearby stars and exoplanets and determine what their atmosphere composition is and actually get some pictures of these planets. Because right now, most of the telescopes we have are designed to look at the wide field of space and not necessarily looking close on specific stars. So what astronomers often do is they look at the wobble in the wavelength of light from a star from when a planetary object orbits, because the way gravity works, there's always going to be a pull, no matter how minute, from any kind of object orbiting another sun or star. So basically what this means is that we were able to confirm that this planet is rocky and relatively Earth-sized as well. So this is by far the closest one we have discovered and lies within a habitable zone too. And this is, you know, I'm just going to highlight how big a deal this is because, you know, 20 years ago in the 1990s when the first exoplanets were discovered, we didn't even know if there were other planets out there, let alone rocky planets, because the first ones that were discovered were gigantic gas giants. So,
And having a rocky planet in a habitable zone would give you every reason to think that water, liquid water, is a possibility.
Absolutely. So, it really shows where we're heading technologically and why, we're not necessarily going to Mars right now, and we probably will within the next 15 to 20 years. But at the same time, we're making leaps and bounds in discovering what's actually happening in the nearby regions of space just from the telescopes that we have. And future telescopes are even going to provide more detail and more clarity on that. So,
and, you know, just as a side note here, Shane, don't let anybody tell you that this space exploration isn't important, because it actually really is. I mean, not only do you get to find out stuff like this, but we've had so many inventions, so yep. many breakthroughs
Velcro.
Because we have went to space. It is important. So sorry that I had to get on the soapbox for there, because it's it's important to me. You know, I've been to NASA. I just love, I don't know. I just have that sense of exploration, and I'm glad that we do it, and I hope that it continues. And I worry sometimes when I hear people bashing that stuff, like, why do we spend so much money on it? It's like, well, because you understand that cell phone in your pocket came from the program, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
that's right.
The smoke detector in your house came from, you know, it's little stuff that people don't realize. So.
Yeah. And,
all right, that's,
you know,
that's back to you.
it's great that we're seeing, you know, companies like SpaceX and whatnot be around, because that allows the larger organizations like NASA and the European Space Agency to focus on the moon, Mars, and beyond. Well, these private companies can service low Earth orbit and the International Space Station. And, you know, this is a really a call to anyone out there who wants to get involved in this kind of thing. It's at this point where it's such a major point where we can make changes to the way space programs work, is that if you at all have a chance to, you know, activist for anyone regarding space, that's something you should take the opportunity up and do. Because if you look back at, you know, the early Apollo programs, for example, those were bleeding edge. They were risky. They were expensive, but they got the job done. Then mm-hmm. space, at least from the NASA side, became a bureaucracy and progress slowed down, right? And, you know, just imagine if you had kept the pace from the Apollo program, where we would be today.
Yeah, that's and where we are isn't too shabby. You know, we're doing great, but yeah, there's been way too much of a pullback. And I used to, where I went to college, I used to know, like, I would be walking through the same buildings that Neil Armstrong walked through, and you couldn't help but to think about that, and just be in awe and think, we did this as a species. We
yep.
did this. Like, how cool is that? So you can tell me and Shane are both probably big space nerds.
Indeed. All righty. Well, that's it for tech news. We're going to move on to the Skill of the Month update. The Skill of the Month this month is thieving. We've had a relatively flatlining experience here by JamAndy52, who is currently holding at 9.3 million XP gained. Flash is catching up with 6.3 million gained. And Sunset Fish is in third with 2.7 million XP gain. So it looks like Flash could make a comeback by the end of the month. The month is half over, so we'll just have to wait and see what the result of this is. So, thieving skill of the month. Also, we do have an Informer article this week, one and the same. It was Remembrance Day or Veterans Day in the U.S. or Armistice Day in the U.K., Remembrance Sunday. And as a result of this, on kind of the same vein as that, Alex has put together a poem called One and the Same. It commemorates RuneScape Remembrance, specifically the many souls that fought and died in the God Wars dungeon. So you can give his poem a read at informer.rsbnb.com. It's a long one. I enjoyed it. So give
cool.
it a read.
Yeah,
in line with the current theme of the month. So, all right. So we have some achievements this week.
We have quite a few achievements.
Indeed.
You know.
So I'll get us off the road here. So Starting off on November 15th, we have Cyan Pinero with 99 Slayer. Moving on to the 14th, we have a Seafarer with 99 Farming. That's what I like to see. Good job. On the 12th, Parnassius got 120 Invention. On the 11th, Catatonic with 120 Ranged. Ray 66 with 99 Farming, another great one. Ms. Coden 10 got 99 Divination. PTV Sully got 99 Dungeoneering and 99 Slayer also on the 10th. Good job, everyone.
Very nice. And on the 10th, Sir Blue Waffle, 99 Attack. Sorry, that
great name.
Quite the name. PTV Sully was not done because he went ahead and got, or she got, a 99 Thieving on the 10th. And yet, he got a, or she got another one with PTV Sully with 99 Attack on the 10th. He was, man, they were busy. Choto 3000 got 99 Construction. All right, there's someone after my own heart on November the 10th. And Grim Roper got 99 Ranged. A Seafarer was not done with 99 Strength on November the 9th. And Halal Bacon got 99 Ranged on November 9th. Is that how you would say that, Shane? Is it
Halal Bacon, I think.
Halal Bacon.
Yeah.
There we go.
Good job, everyone. Nice achievements.
Yeah, very good. Awesome.
All right. So Black Friday's coming up, and I think you have a pick of the week for us.
I do. I will have an article coming out shortly, and it's looking at the top five games, in my opinion, of course, of the fall season. So there are some really good ones out there, and if you have gamers in your family, I guarantee one of these games is on their Christmas list. So specifically, I'll be talking about Shadow of War, Middle Earth, Shadow of War, Assassin's Creed Origin, Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus, Call of Duty World War 2, and of course, Battlefront 2.
Of course, Battlefront 2.
Of course.
So which of these would you say is your favorite?
You know, it's really hard. So I've already purchased Battlefront because I have to. It's in the contract as a Star Wars fan. But if I could only have one, I would have went with Wolfenstein 2. If you've ever played any of the new iterations of the Wolfenstein games, they are so good. And Wolfenstein 2 is, it's really, really well reviewed. I like story-driven games, and this is a 100% story-driven game. It's this really cool alternative timeline where the Nazis won World War II, and you're fighting against them, and America has fallen in this game, and they're over here, and they're just some of the craziest looking like cutscenes where just some strange bedfellows you find in the cutscenes. And but these characters like are so fleshed out, and they're really good. I really like it. It's, you know, a basic shooter, but you can have your options. You can upgrade your weapons, and you can dual wield, or, you know. And the cool thing about the Wolfenstein games is you can be stealthy if you want to, or you can go in blasting. There's no penalty for either way you want to play. So that's kind of nice.
That's something I think games have been going away from as well. It's either all or nothing, and the game is designed to force you down one of these paths, and you basically got to decide. It's good that you can have your choice here as to how to complete that. So,
yes, hey, this is one of the few games that isn't shoving loot boxes in your face and this and that. It's proud to be what it is, and I love that about it. You know, it didn't feel the pressure that it has to have a multiplayer mode, and it has to have, you know what I mean? It's just, it is what it is, and it's unapologetic. And I love that about this game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. That's good. It's also by Bethesda, published by Bethesda. Mm-hmm. I think those guys do the Fallout series. I don't know if they have a good track record or not, but Wolfenstein looks good. I remember seeing previews of this at E3. Looked pretty interesting. So,
yeah, and the first two, like I said, I played, and they're awesome. I enjoyed them.
All right. So, pick of the week, a bunch of games with some focus on Wolfenstein 2. And if you're looking at getting any of these, next week would probably be the week, because Black Friday.
So, yep, it's coming.
All righty. Thank you, Tanis. So, what have you been up to on RS?
You know, a lot of dailies and Slayer. I recently reached my goal of 120 prayer.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
That is my only optional.
I think we mentioned that on the podcast last week.
So appreciate that. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that one. I've been, you know, of course, the first thing I had to do was go get the deacon title so that I could be the deacon in my 120 prayer cape. After that, I just went back to Slayer so that I can try to finish that out. Because at this point, we're creeping ever closer to comp. I mean, we're getting closer. So
yeah,
I figured I might as well start
advice
working
to you
on
there
the old
would
Slayer.
Just be to not burn yourself out with that.
Yes, of course, of course.
How? All right. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much what I've been up to.
Okay.
How about you, Shane?
Well, I've been doing my usual routine of herb farming, arc fishing for invention, amongst other things. I got 85 invention. Also, when I disassembled my rod for level 85 invention, I got Malcolm the invention pet.
Oh, congrats, man. That's awesome.
So apparently that one is kind of hard to get because, you know, you're only getting invention XP, you know, somewhat infrequently when you disassemble or siphon. So it's a pretty big deal to get it before level 99, I'm imagining. So
yeah, wow, you're under level 99?
Yep, I'm level 86 right now. I got
86.
I got
with
it,
Malcolm.
Yeah, you know, I got it when yeah. Well, less than that actually. I got it when I disassembled the rod that pushed me over to 85.
Oh wow. Dude, that's cool. Yeah, you should cruise with him out everywhere for a while.
Yeah, I'd like to see some updated stats on how many of the pets are in game currently of all the various types, because, you know, it's always interesting to me to look at the skill pets, because they came out, you know, I believe it was August 22nd, 2016, and I have gotten 7 pets since that time.
Oh, wow.
I have got 10 million fishing XP. I got that pet. I have got 2 million divination XP, 14 million invention XP, 10 million farming XP, 22 million herb lore XP, 1.7 million woodcutting XP. And I'm forgetting who else I have, but yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't have that many, like, I get the XP, but I'm not putting that much into it to get the pets, which
you're very lucky. You're very lucky. I've known people that have probably doubled that altogether on one pet, and
wow, since that's come out, I've gained only 95 million XP in total.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also got Rue the runecrafting pet with 4.5 million XP.
Oh, okay, now I'm jealous. Now I'm jealous.
That was on bonus XP weekend. Yeah, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but 7 pets. So
yeah, that's cool, man. 7 pets and 95 mil, you said?
Wow. Yeah, 95 mil overall XP. Much less when you split it out between each of the skills. The only one over 10 million XP was invention, but of course that's allowable because that works differently.
Yeah, it does. So, man, you got Rue. So jealous.
I'm not even 99 RC yet. Anyways, well, with that being said, that pretty much wraps up this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you for being here, Tanis, and we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update on American Thanksgiving. Take care, everyone.
See ya. Bye.